Collectors, let's talk about the real villain in your collection. It's not Dr. Doom, it's the dreaded box stack. You know the one, piles of sagging boxes, and the issue you need is always in the bottom box. When you lift, you pray your spine survives. If your comic boxes are stacked like a game of Jenga, it's time for Drawer Boxes, the easy access storage solution from CollectionDrawer.com. Drawer Boxes are stackable up to 6 high, but you don't have to unstack anything to get inside. Just slide out the drawer and you're opening a treasure chest of comic glory. And just like any file cabinet drawer, they'll hang open on the own while you peruse your collection, thanks to their patented box locks box anchors that secure each unit so that they won't tip. Worried about a drawer slipping out and dumping that near mint run of Ultimate Spider-Man on the floor? Not a chance, but their patented locking tabs that keep drawers securely locked into their shell until you're ready to remove them. Let's talk box sort upright dividers. They keep your comics standing tall, sorted by title, issue, era, whatever you like, and make it easy to file. No more leaning stacks causing spine cracks. So ditch the lifting, ditch the chaos. Drawer boxes turn your collection into a library, not a workout. Visit CollectionDrawer.com and start enjoying your collection today. Doesn't your first Deadpool appearance deserve better than being buried in a cardboard coffin?
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we're coming to you live from a bunch of places on the internet. We're live on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Twitch, Kick, LinkedIn, of course. And if you have any job questions, you can hit up Pete on LinkedIn. He pays for, I believe you pay like $5,000 a year for LinkedIn Premium. Is that correct, Pete?
Nope.
Oh, did it cost that much?
I don't know. I honestly don't pay much attention to LinkedIn, to be perfectly honest, other than the show, which I love all.
You could be getting job offers.
All of our many business contacts who watch us on there.
Yeah.
But let me talk about some real business here, which is patreon.com/comicbookclub. Now, we have a bunch of people who are really wonderful and support us over there. They do anything from $2 and up, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later. But anybody at the $5 and up level, we give a little shout-out, a little thank you
thank
at the beginning
you.
Of the month. So here come those names, and if you tune out for a second and tune back in, this could be pretty weird, but Aaron C. Hollis.
Aaron Flo.
Adam DeRose.
Adam Marks.
Adriel Moreland.
Elena Fontenot.
Andrew Primo.
Andrew Tillman.
Beercat PhD.
Bradley Hansen.
Gary Matthews.
Chad Post.
Chen Smale.
Christina Jaramillo.
Christina Rensfield.
Chris Terlizzi.
Clemens Luer.
Corey Shasher, member of the CBC Fantasy Football League.
Corey Smoker, who I love to go out and smoke with.
Dan Snow, what's up?
Daniel Cabral.
Daniel Fuentes.
Danny Hack.
Darren Tupots.
Tupots.
David McKay.
Dennis Scott.
Derek the Main Heart.
Doug Sadoway.
Dylan LJ.
Eduardo Martinez.
Emmett M.
Enrique Chooms.
Gary Meyer.
Gerard DeVilliers.
Ian Rainey.
We don't need to do it how Pete does it. Isaac Carter.
I just think it's funny. JG.
Jack Foster.
Think other people have taken on Pete's pronunciation of their name from this? Let's find out. Jake Fry.
James Connolly.
Jared Sloan.
Jaron Townsend.
Jason Donahue.
Jeffrey Whaley.
Joe Benton.
John Henderson.
Jonathan John.
Josh Wright.
Joshua W. Broxson.
Joshua Wiggler.
Kelby.
Kevin Kleinrock.
Kieran Broderick.
Lance Kaminsky.
Luana Thomas.
Lee Hunt.
Lucas Sink.
Matt Tice.
Matthew DePalma.
Matthew Schofield.
Matthew Taylor.
Max Baker.
Michael McKellef.
Michael Tillman.
Nathan Hall.
Nelson Kelso Martinez.
Nick G.
Nick Grayson.
The official CBC chef, Brett McChris.
Omnia Soul Art.
Oren Dix.
Oidis Larson.
Pedro A. Wrangel.
Provocative Ambulance.
Ooh, wow. Rev Mikey.
Ricky Smith. Are we just doing that for...
Robert Pennato.
Roxanne Tyler.
Russ Burlingame.
Sam Lim.
Sarah Schottmuller, not my
Sarah Schaefer.
Sauter.
Scott Carpenter.
Scott England.
Severin.
Stanley.
Steve Cook.
Steve Hunsberg.
Taylor Bryan.
The Big Flood.
The 12 Batch.
Tim Bubb.
Troy Milleneau.
Victor Perez.
William Buchanan.
William Diaz.
W. M. Leach.
Zachary Bachman.
And Zika's Viral Comics. Thank you so much to all of you for supporting our podcast. We appreciate it. We appreciate everybody who supports our podcast for real. I know I say it every month, but this show costs a lot of money to do, and we would not be able to keep doing it without it. That's the right. Generous donations of Patreon supporters. If you would like to support it, $2 and up. At $2, you get access to our very active Discord. You also get access to our back catalog of podcasts going all the way back to 2011, many of which are otherwise no longer online. And then up from there, you can get ad-free podcasts. You can get merch. We're currently voting on what the next merch should be in our Discord. Riverdale After Dark getting sunsetted. What will be next? I guess we'll find out pretty soon. But lots of exciting stuff going on there. And thank you again to all of you for your support. But moving on, we got a bunch of great guests for you this evening. So we're going to bring on the first one. He is the creator behind Talking to My Father's Ghost, an almost true story, which is out now from Chronicle. Ladies and gentlemen, Alex Crocus. Alex,
hey,
welcome. Hello.
Welcome.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for coming on. I'm always excited to have another Alex who appreciates cheese on the podcast. I'm very excited to talk about this.
Please don't explain that.
Yeah. No. There's you spend a good portion of the book talking about cheese, and I guess I don't know exactly how true it is, but you worked on a cheese farm at least for a while. Is that correct?
That was my entry point into cheese, yes. I was also a cheesemonger for several years before I got into comics, and readers of my new book will know that that experience does inform the work.
Do you mind if I ask? A lot of other businesses have monger in the title. It's nice that cheese has been able to hold on.
Cheese monger.
A lot of comic book jobs, ironmonger, warmonger, et cetera, that sort of thing.
True. Those are jobs. I forgot about the trade of warmongering. That's up there too.
Wait, do you mind if I ask? These guys are going to kill me, but I'm really curious. What cheese shop did you work at?
I worked at a cheese shop in Brooklyn called Stinky Brooklyn.
I bet I saw you there.
Oh, yeah.
I used to work on Smith Street and around the corner and different restaurants. So.
Oh, right on. Where about?
I worked at Jolie, and I know Jolie Cantina very well. So.
Nice. Yes, I frequented Jolie when I did work in the area.
Excellent. Nice. Well, that wraps up the cheese-based portion of our interview.
Yeah, let's get into the fact that you made this amazing story that made me cry. It was beautiful. Yeah. Cheese love aside, which, you know, as we've already covered, a lot of great cheese love. But, man, the father's, as soon as I saw the title, I was like, well, I'm in for a cry, so let's buckle up.
Yeah.
Well, the thing that I love about this book, and like we were intimating earlier, it is based on true life. And again, up to a certain point, I imagine, it follows the passing of your father and then over time dealing with the grief of that, dealing with his death, while I'm going to throw this out there, you correct me if I'm wrong, some imagined conversations with his ghost.
Yeah, mostly, yeah. It's like a mix of imagine conversations and conversations I had in the past that I wanted to like tie into my present. It's a mix of conversations that I wish that I had. And this was a means of processing those conversations. And some were just ones that I had while growing up with him that I kind of wanted to loop back into this story. And it was a cathartic book to write.
Yeah, I bet.
It's cathartic to read. I my father died and like 15 years ago, and this was both the situation felt similar to me, but also the sort of casual emotionality of the characters in the book is a lot like my family. So I was definitely hit by this in a really nice way. Uh-huh. But can you talk about the format? Because I love the chaptering as well, especially with something that really goes at the emotion while keeping some comedy in there. Like, why did you choose that format?
Yeah, so I came up doing web comics, mostly for social media, like Instagram and Twitter and company. And I was most comfortable with like short format gag strips. And this was my first attempt at doing long form storytelling. And I kind of wanted to keep it in my wheelhouse. So I thought that if I kept the chapters really short and bite size, I could play to my strengths a little bit and have it be a little bit longer than four panels, but constrained enough that I could punctuate things with a punchline, have a little bit more breathing room for the melancholy, a little bit of sentimentality. But I really wanted to keep it short and sweet for one, that reason, and two, I kind of wanted it to hit like a collection of Calvin and Hobbes Sunday strips.
Nice.
That's kind of what I spent a lot of my childhood like reading in the bathtub.
Hell yeah, bro.
And I really like that as like, I don't know, as something you read in one sitting, even though I feel like the intention of those comic strip collections wasn't really meant for that. They're kind of like coffee table books that you like crack open, read some pages of, and then you put it back down. But this, I wanted to have it feel like the comic books that I read when I was a kid, but there's actually an arc to it.
Hmm. Yeah, can you talk a little bit about the anthropomorphized characters for anybody who's not watching live in the book? Everybody is animal characters, but what I thought was kind of interesting, and I assume there's a reason behind this, particularly in your family, not everybody is the same type of animal. Like, you're not all raccoons. You're a raccoon, your mom's a raccoon, your dad's an owl, your brother's a dog, I believe. So what led to that?
I kind of wanted to use like anthropomorphized animals for the book to just like bring a little levity to the subject. You know, it's a book about death and grief, and that could be sad, but there's a lot of humor in the book, and I kind of wanted to propose that talking about these downer subjects can have humor to them. That's how my family like copes with like any kind of hardship.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. My dad was Jewish, my mom's side is Italian, so dark humor is very much in my toolkit. And yes. I kind of wanted, I thought that animal people can be a helpful device for that.
Mm. I mean, just in terms of that, I am Jewish, and I thought it was really fascinating to see how you and your family were embracing the mourning process and even the funereal process, setting that up based on the fact that, like, there's a discussion in the book where you're talking about, oh, normally a Jewish family, you would have the funeral the day afterwards, but we're having it a little later. I mean, I don't know if this is getting too personal, but we just read a personal book about you. What was that experience of being Jewish and Italian, like, religiously growing up?
In my experience, it kind of led to somewhat of a secular upbringing, sort of. I think when you are being raised in a household of like multiple faiths, you kind of see that there's a lot of different takes on life and what religion can look like. And I think it gave me like an open-mindedness to like all faiths.
Cool.
Beg pardon, sorry.
I said, oh, wow, that's really interesting that it actually opened you up rather than just becoming a more much more internal sort of religious power struggle or philosophical power struggle.
Yeah, I think that I was raised, I think, more Catholic than Jewish because my mom was and is like more religious. But, you know, I grew up celebrating Christmas and Hanukkah and like Easter and Passover. And think it just gave me like a well-roundedness of when it came to faith and belief. And I'm like really grateful for that.
Cool.
not to keep pushing on this particular thing, but I am curious about how
hard question.
Well, no, I'm very curious how it affected your views on death because of that. Like, that's very applicable to this book. And I'll say one thing that struck me when I was growing up, I grew up in like a conservative Jewish household. We went to temple pretty frequently. I was bar mitzvahed, etc. But I remember hearing at some point late in the process that in the Jewish afterlife, everybody goes, this is a simplified version, but everybody goes to a big gray valley. That's pretty much it. Mm-hmm. So like whatever you do in life, if you're the worst person or the best person, we're all going to the same place. And that really very much affected me in terms of my worldview and how I embrace things. So I'm curious from your perspective, growing up at these mixed faiths, embracing many different faiths at the same time, how did that impact your view on death?
And you can podcast from this afterlife, right, Alex? Just to be, just checking in on that.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's it's still a fun. Big gray valley with like...
But only from hell.
Yeah. Now that tracks. That's tracking.
Well done, sir.
I think that, I don't know, depictions of the afterlife or manifestations of it, I think Catholicism had a bigger impact on me because there's like so much... We're bringing it back to mongering. There's so much fear mongering yeah. with that. Like, there's, I feel like the idea of hell is used to like incentivize you to like be a good person.
Yeah.
At least that's like how I was like taught in mass and like catechism. And I also think that like that duality of heaven and hell is like depicted a lot in media and like shows and films that I grew up with. So I think that shaped how I viewed the afterlife too. And I poke fun at it a lot in the book. Like my dad's ghost is cracking a lot of jokes about what heaven and God is like. And that's definitely more of the Catholic side of the afterlife. But as an adult, I think that it could be kind of sensationalist, and those things I can find funny. So I poke fun at it a lot in the book for that reason.
What was it like? I mean, I think you touched on this a little bit earlier, but what was it like going back to this period in your life while you were creating the book? Did it feel like you were literally, you know, figuratively with your father's ghost again? Did that give you a little bit of comfort? Was it hard to tackle emotionally? How did that hit you?
It was definitely hard to tackle at times. I can very confidently say that I've very thoroughly processed the loss of my father. and I'm grateful for the book being able to provide me that, because I think when a lot of us lose a loved one, we kind of push it away. We don't really want to deal with it because we're still like living our lives. We got to go to work. And we kind of just like put those feelings on the back burner. But I wrote this proposal for the book. I shopped it around, sold it, had to make it. And those like difficult to process feelings were like very much in the forefront of my mind. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad I did that, because I had a lot of like hard feelings that I really had to sit with and like figure out like, what am I trying to say about these in this like book that I'm making? And yeah, one of the takeaways I want people to have from my book is that if you're grieving and you're having a hard time, make art about it. It's like such a great way to, I don't know, just like cope with what you're struggling with. You don't necessarily have to work on a graphic novel for 3 years. but you know, like you could draw a picture and that might help.
That's what sitting Shiva is, right? Is working for 3 years on a graphic novel.
Yes, yeah, I did the long form version of that.
What was it like showing this to your family?
I think overall the reception was positive. My mom told me that there were some things that she wished that I didn't put in the book, which I think was unavoidable, because there's like some things in the book that are like a little messy And my mom, who's like a little, you know, she's older than me. She's kind of old fashioned. And she's just like, I don't know why you had to go and like add all those things about X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, well, there's like a narrative, mom. There has to be like some conflict in order for the book to be worth reading. She overall was like fully supportive of me telling my story.
Yeah.
And that was a thing I had a hard time with too. Cause at first I was like, I'm painting a portrait of my father and my family. I got to make sure I get this right. And I like pay proper respect. And that was really overwhelming. Yeah. But then I like realized that like, I'm not a biographer. I'm not writing a biography. And instead of this being a portrait of my father, it's a portrait of my relationship with my father. Mm. And that's something that I feel that I'm capable of writing about.
Yeah.
I could do the biography, but that's just like a totally different project with a, you know, a totally different intent.
Go ahead, Pete. Sorry.
I just want to start by saying thank you for making this book. It was really awesome to read something like this. And it gives me hope because, you know, when I die, maybe I'll get funnier because your dad got hilarious after he died. So it gives me a lot of hope. Oh, great. I mean, that's great news. Yeah. People should talk about that more.
That's definitely good news for this podcast long term.
Yeah. When we're doing it from hell. So I just wanted to say thank you. This was such a great artistic also achievement, the tone that the art sets. You talked about it in those kind of sit-in moments. And I also think the chapter breaks helps with that tone as well. It's just so well kind of designed. I didn't really have a question there, but just wanted to praise your work.
I appreciate it. I'm glad that the structure was effective and that you guys think so.
Well, now that you have embraced this structure, now that you have done a graphic novel, how are you feeling about another one? I know that you have gone back to shorts as well, and you had a collection that came out from Silver Sprocket, I believe, a couple of months back. But do you think something long form is something you want to tackle again?
I had a great time writing this book, you know, like emotional hurdles aside. And I kind of kept it in that like rigid, like 6 panels per page format just so it could stay manageable for me. But I'd really like something with like a more like open-ended panel layout. I think I did the right thing keeping it very structured and formulaic for this book, but I'd love to try something with, just like a more ambitious panel layout that really takes advantage of the comic medium. I really love books like Asterius Polyp and Jillian Tamaki's most recent book that she did with her cousin, Roaming. Both of those books have like such like amazing, cool panel layouts. And I'd love to do something like half as cool as either of those books.
I was about to be like, well, you already have, but that sounds kind of insulting. you've created a great book on your own.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
Before we let you go, though, is there anything else you want to plug? Anything else people should be checking out?
In the meantime, I resumed doing 4-panel comics. I still post those on all my socials, which is just my name, at Alex Crocus.
Nice.
So, you know, give me a follow if you like my sense of humor and you want to just keep up with my stuff.
Awesome. Alex, thank you so much. I will see you at the cheese shop.
Great.
Love the book. Really got me. I saw myself in this book in a way that I feel like doesn't happen very often. So shouts to that.
Thanks a lot, guys. It's been a blast being here.
All right. Cool. Thank you. Have a great night, Alex. And for all of you, once again, the book is called Talking to My Father's Ghost, an almost true story. You can get it out now from Chronicle. And also check out Alex Crocus. That's for anybody listening, Crocus. Just so you know, on his social. So we have another guest for you this evening. He's one of the guys behind a lot of different books that are coming out. pretty much all the time, and we're going to talk about a bunch of them. Ladies and gentlemen, Ethan S. Parker. Ethan, hey, welcome back.
Hello. It's great to see you guys. Thank you so much for having me. I am so intimidated to be coming on after Alex. Oh, my God. You're incredible.
Dude, well, you better here's be the ready thing. To let me, open let me up, just bro. Read off what you and your partner in crime, Griffin Sheridan, are working on. So you've got Godzilla Escape the Dead Zone from IDW, which is part of the new Kaisei universe that was kicked off with Godzilla. Yeah. Continues with this. It's a different story. You got Blink and You'll Miss It coming out from Boom Studios, which is a wild, I want to say fantasy horror, but we'll get more into that in a second. Then you've got the Marvel Zombies Red Band, which is coming out from Marvel. And I will mention the second issue of Godzilla Escape the Dead Zone, the second issue of Blink and You'll Miss It, and the first issue of Marvel Zombies Red Band are all coming out on September 17th.
Yeah, isn't that insane?
Really?
That's crazy.
That's what you want, right? That's the best way to do it.
Yeah. We're just promoting everything. Just go down the rack and pick up everything. I mean, that's obviously a coincidence of publishing schedule, but how are you guys feeling about that?
Yeah, well, I did want to say I'm sorry Griffin couldn't be here. He had to drop out at the last moment because he got held up at the day job, but he wanted to be here. He misses you guys. It's true. He talks about it all the time, but the books all dropping at the same time is insane because these are all things that we have been working on for a very, very long time. And like, you know, we'll be working on one for quite a while and then that will stop. And then we'll be intensely working on another one and that will stop. And then we switch back to the other one. So like schedules will be all over the place, but then like, then they'll all just drop at the same time. And then people are like, how'd you do this? And it's like, well, it's not, it's an illusion. But there's been a lot of stuff in the works over the last year or so since Kill Your Darlings, and we were not expecting all of it. We were like, oh great, we're like, we'll have a whole slate. We didn't think it was all just gonna land in a big pile, but here it is. And there's more, and there will be more too after this.
Let's go in the reverse order that I mentioned, just because it's top of mind. Marvel Zombies, because they released a trailer for the Disney Plus series today. This though, I will mention, totally different concept, and I think it's a really fun concept. It, correct me if I'm getting any of the details wrong, but it takes place at the dawn of the Marvel Universe. Fantastic Four go into space, get hit with cosmic rays, come back as zombies, and essentially you're jumping forward, I believe, a decade every issue. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, you know, ish. It gets kind of squishy, but it is. Yeah, it is roughly sort of a life story style situation where we're going back to the start of the Marvel Universe, just knocking it off course immediately, and it's set on this new path where with each issue we're sort of approaching different Marvel eras and events of how they could have gone differently if things had gone zombie right off the bat. And so it is, it's a whole new universe, whole new version of all these characters, and anything can happen, which is really crazy. We actually pitched it with the title Marvel Zombies Death Story. I don't know why it didn't end up as that, that is essentially what it is a sort of life story riff, but everybody got really gross a really long time ago.
Well, I wanted to ask you about the pitching process just a little bit more, just because, and I don't know how much you could talk about this, but Marvel Zombies at one point was a very specific thing with a very specific continuity. Right. And now, over the past couple of years, it feels like a bunch of different things. It's kind of like a capsule of they are Marvel characters who are zombies, and it's all kind of disconnected. So what did they come to you with? Were they just like, we want a fresh Marvel Zombies, we want this take? What was involved?
Yeah, I mean, we had just done the Green Goblin one-shot that came out in July. We had just been wrapping that up, and the wonderful Jordan White, dropped into our inboxes and was like, hey, we're trying to, ahead of the TV show dropping and everything, we want to kick Marvel Zombies into a new gear and put a new stamp on it. And take it in a new direction because, there have been several iterations at this point. Some of them are just like extremely as iconic as you can get in comics. Like working on anything that Robert Kirkman has touched is terrifying. But yeah, he wanted something fresh and new and a whole different approach. And so, yeah, we just threw a lot of stuff out there. And this one of like, let's take it all the way back to the beginning and just and not have any assumptions about where any of these characters should be. We'll just send them into a whole new world. That was something that he was really excited about. So, yeah, they gave us a crazy amount of freedom.
I love the specificity of that. Can you talk about the red band part of it?
Yes.
Hey, really cool. Can you make this fucked up?
Yeah, basically, yeah, which is, you know, it's cool because, you know, Griffin and I obviously started with Kill Your Darlings at Image, which is like a very, very violent book while also being very colorful and silly and fun. And so that's something that is obviously very like in our wheelhouse and something we enjoy doing. And so it felt like a match made in heaven for sure that, yeah, Jordan was like, well, the show is going to be, you know, pretty adult. It's TVMA. It's going to be really, you know, bloody and nasty and whatever. So the comic, like, let's really, you know, kick it up a notch. And yeah, like he let us know, like, go as crazy as you want with this stuff. Make sure that it gets grody. And so like, we have not pitched doing anything violence wise that we got a no to. we've thrown everything out there. And
Jordan
and
D. White is a freak, man. He's crazy.
Well, he's game is the thing. Like he's just whenever something sounds fun, he's like, let's do it. And it is like it's truly surreal to write like, yeah, and the Hulk just lands on someone and their eyeballs shoot across the panel and it's as visceral as you could possibly imagine. And then just to see that art come in and it's just like, oh, they let it happen. Okay, cool. Yeah. It's crazy.
Cannot wait. We do have two sort of like wonkier questions in the comments here that I wanted to bring up. I think they're kind of related, but Nat Towson says, was this at all inspired by the Ultimate FF Zombies? And then Eric MCI 900 says, is this a separate Marvel Zombie universe from Earth 2149?
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, whole new universe. This is a universe we have not seen before at all. And as for the Ultimate Fantastic Four stuff, yeah, I mean, that is one of my favorite stories in comics. We've talked a lot about the Ultimate Universe is extremely formative for me and Griffin. And that story in particular was just like, that's one of those things that if you read it as a kid, it just like really shows you what comics are capable of. But like the way that it plays with your expectations of like, look, it's Ultimate Reed making contact with 616 Reed. And then the bait and switch that it's like, no, it's actually like so much darker, so much scarier. And yeah, I mean, that stuck with us forever. So yeah, and you know, also the Fantastic Four movie, you know, coming out around this time is like, those are characters that Griffin and I are obsessed with. We're big Silver Age nuts. And so to be able to play with all of those toys is just like, we were just ready to take it and run. Yeah.
Cool. It's awesome.
Cool.
I want to move on and talk about Blink and You'll Miss It, which is out now for Boob. I don't know how much you want to talk about it because there's like so many wild twists in the first issue. Yeah. But before we get into it at all, I do want to mention every week on the show, we have a professional chef, Brett and Macris, down in New Orleans, who creates a drink for us based on one of the guests of the titles. And this week, he created Drink and You'll Miss It. It's rye whiskey, creme de cassis. Am I pronouncing that right, Justin, our bartender?
Creme, but yes.
Creme de cassis. Lemon juice, maple syrup, and black walnut bitters.
Whoa.
And it's the sort of you could probably go home, but maybe you shouldn't type drink. So there you go.
That's really cool. That's an honor. Thank you.
But let's talk about the book. So the first issue is out, and at first, I'll sort of like talk through the beginning and then you tell me where you want me to stop. But at first, it kind of seems
honestly,
like a sort of
whatever's
like,
in the first issue is fair game. You go for it. Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, we start off with this woman who leaves town and it seems like almost a slice of life story, which I was very surprised by, where woman leaves town, comes back, and it is reflecting on that, like, wow, everything's the same, but little things are different. Here I am back in the town. Right. And then it starts to spiral off into there's something clearly wrong about this town the more she explores the place. And then by the end, you get to see on the final page that things are very, very wrong in the town. Yeah. So talk a little bit about, like, what was the thematic thrust and what was the plot thrust? Like, what was, again, not to keep going back to, but, like, the pitch for this thing?
Yeah, I mean, this was a really interesting one. This was our first time working with Boom Studios, and they they've been wonderful. And they, like, you know, that, like, we didn't have an editor on our image book. And so this was a really new situation where, like, not only did we have an editor, we've had multiple editors, but we've had we've also gotten to speak with, like, you know, the team at Boom Studios, and they help sort of guide the process. And so we actually went through multiple pitches with them, just discussing what we might all want to work on, and went through several iterations. Like, I think we were basically working on, like, three distinct sort of separate book concepts for them, and they ended up really liking this idea of a girl who slips backwards through time. Which is sort of, there's a lot going on in the first issue and in the series in general, but that's sort of at the heart of it. And so that was something that they were like, really dig into that. And so we started, you know, walking through that concept, and it took us quite some time to really crack what we wanted to do with that, and what that meant to us. Cause it was, you know, inherently it sounds really sad. if you're reliving all of your days backwards, you're rewinding through your life, and so, like, every time you're encountering something, it's the first time, but it's going away immediately. It's just like, it just feels very melancholic right off the bat. And so we were like, I think this is kind of a sad story, and that was, like, sort of the beginning of, like, really crafting what this is, which is, like, it's very romantic, it's very nostalgic, it's very sentimental. Like, this is very much a book about looking back at where you came from, and how does it look to you now, and what's worth salvaging from that, you know, and what do you just need to move on from, and what has become much, much, much uglier over the years. And it's become extremely personal to us. This book, more than I think anything else we've really worked on, has been really, really exploratory, where, like, we've outlined it really loosely, and we've really just kind of jammed on it, and we've surprised each other with a lot of our scripting, and but through that have, like, found all these things that have really moved us, and found these characters that mean the world to us.
Can you talk about that from a scripting perspective? Just, like,
for sure,
especially something personal. Not to be on a, like, this episode is all about getting personal.
Yeah, but real quick, how did your religious upbringing affect you? Yeah. We like to ask all of our.
Just tell us what you believe the afterlife is, real quick.
Okay, and then,
how did getting personal? I'm assuming your background, upbringing, looking back at that. How do you mesh that as a writing duo?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, we have a lot in common, obviously. That's, you know, that's what brought us together over the internet as children, was that we had a lot in common. It was like, we felt like we were siblings separated at birth, and so we dealt with a lot of the same things, but there also are differences. There are things in the book that don't feel like my life, but, like, in that they were just this interesting spice that really, like, made the story feel more real to me. So, like, you know, when we do our passes separately, and then we'll send it over to each other, and we're like, hey, I found some stuff in here, let me know what you think about that. And then going through, it's like, you know, most of it will either, you know, will sort of ring true of, like, yeah, I feel like I've been through that, or I feel like I know where you're coming from with that. And then some of it is like, what is this? And then, like, we kind of get to learn more about each other through that as well. So it's like, it's this really interesting thing doing a really personal book with someone, where it's like, I think we've gotten closer over the course of it. And in doing that, cool. I think we've found these characters who are, like, I mean, the two girls at the heart of the book, we've started saying it's sort of a series about, like, trying to hold on to somebody really desperately while the world ends around you. Like the world's trying to stamp you out. And Griffin and I both have a lot of experience with that, and we have a very similar worldview. And so it's been fun to sort of walk through those feelings and how we can visualize them and take people through them with us.
Wow. Now, and this is the big spoiler, so I'll just give a spoiler here. But at the end of the issue, there's a lot of monsters and horrible things that show up as well. I don't want to underplay that. So imagine, knowing you guys, things are going to get pretty violent and crazy pretty soon.
Well, I mean, this is not Kill Your Darlings. This is not, you know, this is not a book that's going to explode into a lot of fights and a lot of whatever necessarily. This is a really, really, really distinct book. So while we do have another girl going through another, you know, cosmic situation, We're approaching this one really different. This is maybe the most unique thing we've worked on yet. And so while there will be some strange goings on, you can even see from some of the variants, there's some like hints at just how yucky and weird this is going to get. There is also just like a lot of really like strange, funny, like real life moments, and a lot of just like sitting with characters while they're really bummed out. I don't know. It's like, you can read the Godzilla one or the Marvel Zombies one if you want to see people like exploding each other's heads and whatever, but if you want to have some feels and re-examine your life a little bit but get spooked every now and then, this is the one for you.
Touch the whole emotional palette. That's why you want them out on the same day.
Exactly. And that is what's really cool too about comics, is that you can do that. Like, you can switch over here and work on, you know, a genre thing, and it's and then a property that you don't own, and you can play with those toys and have fun, and then you can come over here and be like, yeah, but what do I feel this week? What am I going through?
I mean, I feel like there's going to be people that pick up these books and they're like, wait, this is the same guys?
Right.
That seems crazy.
I hope so.
That's exciting.
That's a good
The fear is that people would read them and be like, oh, these sound like the same boys. So I hope that is the case, that they feel like just they come from totally different places, because they honestly do.
Well, let's talk about Godzilla Escape the Dead Zone then, because not only is this different from the two other books, but it's also very different from, I read Spaceship Godzilla that's coming out, but Godzilla by Tim Seeley. Godzilla, we talked to Tim Seeley about quite a bit, and that is big, bombastic action. There's like skirting the line of superhero Power Rangers, G.I. Joes type things. Right. Your book, entirely different. You've got a wasteland... almost like a, I don't know, it's sort of almost like an Old Man Logan type thing.
Like a Mad Max kind of.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
And I love the fact that this Kaisei line is all of these different flavors taking place in the same world. So just to kind of start from the beginning, and we did talk to Tim about this a little bit, but what was it like, the initial brainstorming process when you guys were presumably getting together and sort of fleshing out this world?
It was the best. I mean, we're very lucky. We're very fortunate. We've been handed a lot of really great opportunities, and this is no exception, where the Jake Williams, who's the mastermind editor behind this line, came to us at San Diego Comic-Con and was like, you boys like Godzilla? And we were like, fuck yeah, we like Godzilla. And he was like, okay, well, we're trying to build this universe. We want like really distinct flavors in all the books, because that's what's great about comics, right? You cross over different worlds and they can be the same world, but the different corners feel really distinct. And so he asked us, he was like, what would you want to do? And there is, I guess this has been announced now, that there are these characters in this called Runt and Glass Eater, and they are children who can go inside of kaiju and control them like mech suits. And that was our initial idea, was we were like, what if it was, you know, it was, there was like an Evangelion but kaiju kind of situation. And he was like, I love that. Send me some other stuff, just let me know like what all you got in a document. And then so we like generated a bunch more ideas for him. We were like, here's every idea we have related to Godzilla. And then he was like, great, do all of them. Put all of them in the wasteland. And so that was sort of the genesis of the book, was like, the Dead Zone is basically the world in Godzilla's footprint. This is the world left behind by kaiju after they wreck shit. And you know, the place is like irradiated, there's mutant freaks wandering around, and there's kaiju around every corner. And so this is like an opportunity to have some really unique characters, including our wanderer, our Godzilla man here, as well as Runt and Glass Eater. And they wander the wasteland in this sort of over the garden wall, like sort of, you know, fable situation, where they can, you know, issue to issue encounter the strangest things you've ever seen throughout the Dead Zone, because you never know, you know, what's going to be around any given corner. So yeah, we really got to go nuts and just throw every crazy concept we had at the wall here that involved monsters, which, as you know, as Blink and You'll Miss It and everything we've ever done shows, we have a lot of monster ideas.
Well, so this is though a specific franchise with specific monsters, like you're saying, you can go hog wild, but what makes something work within those realms of being Godzilla or Godzilla?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I mean, I think it just has to be sick as hell, right? Like, I think I think that's sort of the uniting thing, because the monsters can be scarier, they can be funnier. We love Manila. They can be many things. The Godzilla films have been many things. They've been hokier, they've been, you know, really, really intense. But all that matters is that it's just really, 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 really cool. And so like, that's what we've really, this is the, I don't know if we've tried harder to make anything like cool in our lives. Like page to page, we're like, is this sick as hell? And so that's also our approach to all the kaiju, right? Every kaiju is somebody's favorite. And so it's like, if they show up, it's gotta be a moment. And if the, yes. And if they fight, it's gotta be earth shattering. And so, yeah, that's what we've tried to do.
This is making me very excited to hear you talk about this in this way, because I'm a huge fan.
You got the shirt on. You're stressing.
But I also wanted to say, as a huge fan of both Godzilla and Tim Seeley, can you talk a little bit about like when you first encountered them and kind of like how they kind of hit you? And
they were together.
Lit you up inside. You know what I mean?
Godzilla and Tim Seeley. We're at a table at San Diego.
Yeah, we were sitting at the table together. Godzilla's right across from me. Tim is right across from Griffin. Yeah, we were all throwing ideas out. It got crazy. Tim.
Godzilla's like, is it lunch yet? Nice.
Yeah, I mean, really doesn't pull his weight. Tim is wonderful. The process of, like being part of a sort of collective like this is not something that, you know, we're just starting to dip our toes into the IP pond. And with Marvel, everything we've worked on has been very much in our own sort of space so far. And so, like, this was a really cool opportunity to work with and sort of shoulder to shoulder with, like, people that we really admire, like Tim, and, like, you know, Chris over on Starship Godzilla, and Oliver Ono, and all these incredible creators. Pablo Tunica, I got a shout out as well on Godzilla. Is just our Godzilla book is an unbelievable cartoonist. And so, like, getting to get on some calls and be like, how does this line up? How does what you've introduced in the mainline Godzilla book spill into the wasteland? How can some of that blast off into space? And like talking about the future and where, you know, how these characters can cross paths, how they can crash into each other's worlds. It's the coolest thing. It's just like playing at the playground, but as an adult, in a not creepy way. It's amazing.
Yeah. This is obviously a lot of stuff that we've talked about here, but is there anything not coming out on September 17th that you want to plug?
Oh man, I there's stuff, but I don't think stuff is announced. There's other, I think that's everything we're supposed to talk about right now. I think, but there will be more. But yes, definitely, you know, Marvel Zombies is coming up. Definitely check it out. Blink and You'll Miss It, you know, like we love all of our books. You know, you can't pick between your children, but Blink and You'll Miss It is something that we've been trying to make happen for a very long time. And we think it's very unique and it's very, you know, hard on its sleeve. And Keith Browning, it's his first time doing full interiors on a book like this. Uh-huh. And he's an absolute genius. And so, yeah, check out these books, man. It's an interesting sort of sampler of a lot of different flavors. And you're going to see us trying a lot of different stuff and having a lot of fun. So, yeah, we hope you'll join us.
Keep up the great work, man. Ethan, so good seeing you again. Congrats on everything.
Yeah, great to see you guys. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Talk to you soon.
Have a good one.
Later. Bye-bye.
All right, there we go. The three titles again. Godzilla Escape the Dead Zone, issue 2, coming out September 17th. Blink and You'll Miss It from Boom, issue number 2, coming out September 17th. And Marvel Zombies Red Band for Adults Only is coming out on September 17th as well. So check those out.
All exciting stuff, man. Can't wait.
All really exciting cool stuff. And folks, we are going to kick it into our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience questions. And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comments. It can be about absolutely anything, and we'll get to it. But while we're waiting, what you guys drinking? What's going on?
I'm drinking the old daytime beer. You know what I mean? You got to drink it in the daytime.
No, I don't know about that one.
People don't like
it. Just boo me?
No, I think the people booed.
Yeah, that was people. That was the audience was booing.
I had a tequila and sfumato, which was really good.
Wow, I guess that wins. Bomb drop. I guess that. Yeah.
I told you I had a little surprise, Pete.
Oh, yeah, I guess this
instant reacts. It's funny they didn't pop up during the interview.
That is weird. I don't know, a little
wrote
suspect.
Wrote a book about my dad. Boo.
We don't need that to happen. Do you want some dog barks? I can make that sound effect.
Well, that's really, wow. This sound effect is called Slide Log, and it's long.
Wow, Slide Log.
Yeah.
Wow. When, all right, who's using that?
Enough delaying. Why don't we get to the questions?
I don't know about that, buddy. What?
Wow, what is Mel Blanc on over here about to turn us into Looney Tunes.
Well, I'm having a good time. Derek Maynard asks, Afterlife, yay or nay?
Great question. Way to keep it cash, Derek.
Yeah. Yay.
Big one.
Yay? Oh, you believe in the afterlife for real?
Why not?
That's
Let's
nice.
Hope so.
Nice to believe. A little cheap if you just casually believe it, because why not? I say nay.
I also say nay. I'm sorry.
Oh, wow.
The nays happen.
Sorry, you got outvoted, Beak.
Well, it's not the first time. Won't be the last.
The Big says, I just finished season 2 of the rehearsal. Thoughts? Crazy show. Think there will be a season 3?
Agree it's a crazy show. I think it's a great show. I think there will be a season 3.
I agree on all of those points. If there is a season 3, I don't think we will know about it until Nathan Fielder is completely done.
Yes.
And anybody who hasn't checked it out, it really is a fantastic mind-bending show. Really profound and hilarious at various points. Absolutely unlike anything else on television. If you don't know what it is, do not read about it. Listen to our recommendation and just start watching it. And that's pretty much it.
100%.
Let's see. We had another one here. Schoikler says, what are some titles that your kids or other younger relatives have gotten you into?
Ooh. Something our kids, titles my kids have gotten into myself into? I don't know.
My son does keep wanting me to read things like he was very into One Piece for a really long time. And Pete is my child, so that's what I was talking about. I always have to tell them, like, I have too much to read right now. I would love to, but I can't do this at the moment. What was the... there was something he wanted me to read the other day. He started reading... we watched all of Stranger Things, and we went to see the live stage show. So we took a bunch of the comics out of the library, and he read through those really quickly. And he was like, oh, you got to read those. And I remembered we read, like, a bunch of first issues of them, but not the rest. So again, like, I didn't have time to read those, but he's definitely pushing them on me hard.
My kids haven't pushed a lot of graphic novels or anything on me yet, but they have been pushing K-pop Demon Hunters. And I'm like, you don't have to. I mean, I like it. I mean, I'm on board. I already watched it. But they're pushing it to me like I don't know.
Oh.
I'm like, guys, I'm pretty
pushing it to you how? Like, listen to the soundtrack, watch it again.
Yes. Watch it with
take
them.
Us to the sing-along.
Not even, they don't know about the sing-along. They
you should probably tell them.
Oh, do you want to bring them on? I'll tell them.
Yeah, no.
I'll tell them they missed it because daddy wouldn't take them.
Yeah.
We don't need to make a daddy wouldn't thing happen. More so in my house. Yeah. So that's definitely one. I mean, they've been reading a lot of the Raina Telgemeier stuff that I have not read a ton of. Mm-hmm. I have been just looking through that a bit. And it's really, really great.
Pete, you know any children or just small adults?
No, my niece and nephews, they were all about the K-pop Demon Hunter. So when I was hanging with them over the Labor Day weekend, it was, it was all the rage.
But you watched that several times before that, right?
Oh, yeah. They're still so watching it.
They got you in. They didn't get you into it. You got them into it.
Well, no, I was like, I had to be ready because I knew it was coming. You know what I mean? Like, Uncle
how
Pete
ready
can't
did you
show
get?
Up.
How many times did you watch it to get ready for watching
a
it?
A bunch, man. You got. I mean, those kids ask questions. Sure. You know what I mean? They got to know your stuff front and back. Yeah.
Yeah, they got to know about the Han Moon. Stray Bullet says, aside from the live show being in person, what's something you missed from pre-COVID lockdown and something you're glad never came back?
Wow.
Did things not come back?
Well, we haven't come back to the pit. I mean, I miss, let me say, seeing Pete. We used to see each other every Tuesday, if not more.
Yeah.
So that was nice. But on the flip side, recording remotely is amazing.
It is pretty great.
We get to talk to so many more different people. We get to do this whenever, wherever we are. That's been really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like you covered it. Maybe he was asking in general, not just about the show.
I missed the 7th beer at Pioneer Bar.
I miss being able to sneeze in people's face and it not be weird, you know?
Yes, it wasn't weird when you did it before. Yeah. You really justified like really it.
Hock-a-loog.
Yeah. I was like, go for it, Pete.
Yeah.
Eric MCI 900 has a question that I think only I could answer, not to take it from you guys, but any thoughts on Kurtzman-era Star Trek? I feel like I'm the one who's watched all of it, and you guys...
You were being
here and there, right?
One.
Yeah, I mean, definitely I'm behind on it. It's been something that when it started, I was in on it, and then I have definitely drifted away. So yeah. Maybe that's my answer.
Part of my answer is, so I think it's a mixed bag. There's a lot of stuff that I've really liked, a lot of stuff that I have not liked at all, but I don't love calling it Kurtzman-era Star Trek. And Eric, to be clear, that's nothing on you, but like, there are so many people involved, and I think people... fans in particular like to blame it on one person. Like they like to pyramid it up to the one person at the top and be like, it's his fault, or very rarely her fault, though I guess everybody blames Kathleen Kennedy for everything with Star Wars. But like, there's hundreds and thousands of people involved in this stuff. It is never just the whims of one person being like, do this or I'll kill you. So Kurtzman has ideas, but I think like, he's not the sole creative on there. There's a lot of other people. There's definitely people he has as lieutenants as well. That said, love Lower Decks. I thought that was great. I didn't love the first season of it, but it amped up really quickly and it figured out its tone, and it's become one of my favorite Star Trek shows ever. It's excellent. Discovery, I'll always go to back for the first season. It definitely fizzled out.
Even the first two. Even the second one had some good juice to it, and then it got a little... I
always appreciated the heart that they put into that show. Like, they clearly loved doing it, but particularly, I mean, to talk about COVID, like, a little bit, all of the shooting techniques that a lot of these shows jump to, being like, great, we can film all of our scenes on the volume, but we don't know how to use the volume, so it looks bad and fake. That's bad. I wish we would go back to where we were before, where people were building sets and really trying to... The entertainment industry had it imploded because of COVID. That would be nice. So I think like that impeded a lot of stuff.
That's a
big, Star Trek Strange New Worlds. I said this on another podcast, and I know this is controversial, but like, I was okay with the first season, thought the second season was very good, and the third season had been bad, like actively bad. Picard wasn't great throughout.
I really wanted that to be good. Man, did I watch that through so some real and not great stuff.
Yes. So like, I don't know. It hasn't been great, but like, I think there's a lot of other factors going on there. And the last thing that I'll say about this before we move on, just because I certainly have obviously a lot of different thoughts about a lot of different directions, but like, the biggest thing working against it is the streaming era and the changes in the streaming era. When Discovery came on at the beginning of that on CBS All Access, that was like, we're going to do Star Trek for the streaming era. It's going to be 10-ish episodes, I think it was like 10 or 13 or whatever it was, and it's going to be like this big action movie on TV. That's what we're doing. And that was cool then, but now what we need, and I think what people want, is like a regular 22 to 25 episode Star Trek show, and they would get so much more out of that. Like, you'd have some wonky episodes, but...
I feel like everyone wants The Next Generation.
Yeah,
as the beginning of it, and then the other subsequent series, Deep Space Nine, all of that. Like, that was where I feel like everyone's heart is in this, and the heart they brought to Discovery, but they just couldn't get it all locked in to do those episodes that lived on as the Titanic episodes of Next Generation.
Well, then I'll throw out the problem I have, or one of the problems that I have with Star Trek Strange New Worlds, is it's 10 episodes in the season. So because of that, half of them are mythology episodes focusing on things that like are not as pressing as you think they are. And then the other five are goof episodes for the most part. And the goof episodes are the ones where like, oh, this is fun. This is maybe the joke works, maybe the gag works, or it doesn't. It doesn't matter. But like, you're just hanging out with these cast members you like a lot. And when you had Next Generation or Deep Space Nine or whatever stretched out other seasons, you'd have the mythology episode once every five episodes or something like that. So there's more space to play and grow and explore these characters. There's just not enough for a franchise like Star Trek on a streaming schedule.
Yeah.
In any case, Michael Tillman says, Dragon Con recently shut down an artist alley booth for selling AI art. I guess no question here, just nice to see the pop cultureverse hitting back against AI as opposed to Marvel editorial. This is getting into a lot of internet things, just if people don't know what's going on with the Marvel editorial thing.
And Discord things that we've talked about. You called this, Alex.
Yes, I did. And then I did not want to get involved. But... Tom Brevoort on his newsletter, which I normally love, was like...
Yeah, you're all about this newsletter.
I am all about this newsletter.
You plug it a lot.
I do plug it a lot. I'm forgetting the headline he used, but it was definitely like, ooh, I'm poking the bear here. And he was like, I know AI is controversial, and I'm 100% paraphrasing. If you want to hear what he actually said, go and read his newsletter, which is on Substack, which supports Nazis. But he, it's true. It is. They will. Anyway, side note there. He was like, yeah, I know, but AI just feels kind of like inevitable. So I was kind of playing around with Google Gemini, and he generated a couple of logos for his Substack. Immediately, when I read that, I was like, this is disrespectful to the real artists that you work with every day. Yeah. And that's exactly what happened. The internet blew up. I saw everything from people being like, yikes, that is disrespectful, to uh-oh, to there's one artist I won't name without calling him out, but like, he has worked for Marvel a lot of times, and he skeeted at Tom Brevoort, fuck you. So like, I don't know what's going to happen next. I don't know if Tom Brevoort is going to apologize or anything. Having read his stuff for a while and certainly interviewing him a bunch, I'm going to guess he will not apologize and be like, really created quite a ruckus there. Anyway, on to your questions and kind of move on.
Yeah.
But it's a real bummer, I think, because it is a existential worry for artists right now. And to casually do something like that is just not the sort of thing you should be doing.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. And but the thing is, I feel like I'm sure he's getting a lot of like sick, nice, cool support as well from the AI people. Mm-hmm. So it's just a shame because the people that his job is meant to take care of are the ones he should be protecting, not randos on the internet who think it's cool that he plagiarized, machined a logo for himself.
Yeah, and we'll see. He hasn't responded yet, so there's plenty of time for him to do the right thing and come back and talk about it in a reasonable way. But we will certainly see what happens. There's a lot of upset people at the moment. Yeah. Stanley says, why do you think so many big IP franchises like Alien, Star Trek, Star Wars, MCU seem to be struggling lately? Do they need to be more original? What do you guys think?
I don't know. I think everyone's a little confused right now, I think. Star Wars MCU feel like they were like too gun heavy and now they're very gun shy. I think they're waiting for money to chill a little bit and then they'll make some more moves. Alien, I think I guess the reviews are varied for Alien Earth, but like, I think it's good.
It is good. The reviews were great, and it did extremely well viewership-wise as well. So I wouldn't necessarily love that in. I know not everybody loves it, and Alien fans are frustrated about the continuity stuff, but it seems to be doing well. So I think that's a little bit of an outlier there. But I do think, like I was talking about with Star Trek, entertainment has changed. It is very different from what was... It always changes year to year, but like 5 years ago, 10 years ago, dawn of streaming, things have changed. People want different things. I do think it's less about original than like dusting them off a little bit, because like the MCU is going to be 20 years old at some point, right? And
yes,
by the point they finish like the Avengers Secret Wars and everything, we're going to be getting, I think, to the 20th anniversary, if I remember correctly. Star Wars, same sort of thing. It's been around for decades. Star Trek, decades as well. All of these have been around for a really long time. And like, you got to figure out how to get new audiences there. There was actually, something that I saw from the husband of the woman who created K-pop Demon Hunters. He worked on a bunch of the character models of the film. He was saying that he was giving all of the success to K-pop Demon Hunters for this. I don't think that's true, but I do think partial of sex success is he's like, the thing that Disney and these other big companies need to do is they need to not be aiming for the parents. They need to be aiming for 20-year-olds, because 20-year-olds are the people who are taping stuff on YouTube and reviewing things and talking about how awesome things are, and that's what kids are watching. I think you could probably extend what he was saying onto TikTok as well, but like, you need to be aiming at least in part to an audience that is that age versus an audience who is our age, who has been served so well over the past several decades.
Yeah, and you know, I was listening to another podcast talking about this, that the the new Star Wars Starfighter news that's been dropping. And it feels like it's going to be another like Lone Wolf and Cub style story of like a Jedi or Star Wars hero type person having to take care of a young person. It's like, guys, nobody likes this story. This story's for no one. Like, the parents are like, I know I'm already a parent. I don't need to see that reflected in every pop culture thing. And kids are like, I definitely don't want to see a parent happening on my in my Star Wars. So let's move on from this type of story. So I do think that's a factor here as well, is risk-averse people in charge of the creative.
Yeah. Michael Tillman says, how did your fantasy football drafts go?
This may be directed to me. The CBC Fantasy Football League, a swollen membership. We're up to 14 players. Yeah, we are big time now. Mine was pretty good, I think. We'll see. We find out starting Thursday when the football season starts.
Get anybody you're excited about? You get
I'm
Buffalo Bills?
About...
Like, what's up, man? Do you draft all Bills? Like, how do you roll?
No, that's not how it works. But I did enjoy. I have a good team, and it's going to be fun. I wish you two losers would join.
Oh, man. How do you do it? Do you do it with some sort of, and I know a lot about this, snake draft?
It is a snake draft. And honestly, great. Alex, I want you to come next time and you can just point to who's next. And just say, like, you're
right. Get it wrong every time.
A real test. Because here's the thing. It's complicated when there's more than three people. I would argue.
Wow. Do you just still do the pull it out of the hat?
No. It's on an app. So the snake draft is decided. So it's easier to not mess up.
What kind of app? Like mott sticks or like jalapeno poppers or what are we talking
poppers,
about?
Poppers, yeah. Because we get the spice. We get a little bit of the cream.
Okay.
Really good.
Oh, nice.
Ken and Melissa LG say, Ewan McGregor has been reported to want to do an Andor crossover. Thoughts? Don't know how that'll be possible, but hashtag let Pete speak.
Wow. Hey. Why?
Why? That's funny. Why not, man? People love Andor. Justin is one of those people. And more Ewan, not less, is what I say.
that Pete panic answer there. I don't know.
How dare you, sir?
I would love this. Like, how do you do that? I mean, it's definitely possible. Anything's possible.
I did not read the article, to be clear, but I did read it because I saw that quote pass through my timeline, and I can guarantee you, as Ewan McGregor being like, yeah, sure, I'd love to do more Obi-Wan Kenobi. Andor is great. Put him in Andor. And people are like, Andor crossover coming. So I don't think it's going to happen.
Well, I guess we'll see. I mean,
I have hope.
Honestly, probably not going to happen. Andor was the biggest budget show potentially ever, so I don't know if they're ready to blow any amount of money in that direction. And to do another season of that would be expensive.
Shout out to Ken and Melissa.
To what?
Yes, shout out to Ken and Melissa, who asked that question simultaneously. And folks, that is it for your audience questions.
Oh, no.
I mean, honestly, this is good. I'm here for it. I'm here for it.
Seems racist. Seems racist.
Racist?
Anyway, we got to move on with our next section, which is trivia. And for that, I'm going to turn it over to Pete LePage. Pulling that train, Pete.
All right. This is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 to Midtown Comics online, because if you had $25, you probably want to go to a comic book shop. So
we already got the Zen Man.
Zen Man.
All right. Great.
Wow, that's quick.
Congratulations. All right. So today's trivia is about the comic Blood Honey and a small nod to the legend Lonnie Anderson. R.I.P. Loved you in WKRP in Cincinnati. Also, honorable mention to Chuck Mange. Chuck Mangione. Come on.
How do you do an honorable mention? Is this part of the movie?
No, just, there's too many people dying in an incredible clip. And Chuck Mangione wasn't in enough movies that I could actually do one on him, so I just gave him an honorable mention.
That's nice.
Yeah.
That makes sense. He was not an actor.
Well, he did a little acting.
Let's get to the questions.
All right. Fine. You know, this is usually Justin's Q&A time. But please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go. Question number one. This very enjoyable comic is put out by blank. Is it A, IDW Dark, B, IDW Light, half the calories, or C, Fun Name Alert, and a Manahan?
Oh.
Well, it's almost an onomatopoeia here.
Be an A? Is it an A?
Wow. Zenman is coming out strong. And that may be the Twitch advantage coming through, knowing that it's always A. Another reason.
Not always. Not every time.
Well, let's see if it changes up at all.
Let's watch it. Let's keep our eyes on the prize.
There we go. Question number two. Who is the talented writer artist on this comic? Is it A, Sean Peacock, B, Sean Peacoat, or C, Dick Zondag?
Nice.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Oh, A again?
A again is correct. Well done. Here we go. Last one. Question number three. This comic is about high school and blank. Is it A, murder, B, stop making weird Taylor Swift Swan Kid references, C, Taylor Swanson?
I like you really focus on the names on this one. This is a pop culture show.
Yep.
We're about to become the E's 11 o'clock hour.
And nice. A for the last question. So he did it. He did it. Congratulations, Zed.
White guy using a gong seems racist.
I think we're all here for it.
Nobody likes that. Nobody likes when you say that, Pete.
Well, stop hitting a gong, Whitey. Wow.
Anyway, what movie were you hinting at there,
Pete? Of course, we're talking about the 1989 animated hit, All Dogs Go to Heaven.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Yeah. Zenman, shoot us an email at comicbookclublive@gmail.com, and we will get a gift card to Midtown off to you. By the way, I should mention before I forget, because I did forget earlier, that this show is sponsored by Drawer Box Storage System.
Yes.
The storage system, you can get it at collectiondrawer.com. And I know we talk about it every week, but it really is awesome. You can get short boxes or long boxes. The long boxes are regular long box size. They hold most action figure packs. I never read that part. I don't know what that means. Huh. Anyway, they hold
action figures in the bubble.
Oh, okay. 235 comics, 270 without bags and boards. The other one that holds 145 comics. And you can stack them. The cool thing about collection drawer boxes is that
six high they go, which is
six
impressive.
High they go. But they are really great. They're a real upgrade for your collection. So yes, check
quality
them
stuff.
Out now. And before we wrap up.
Oh,
what?
You should also let them know the Comic Book Club sent you.
Yes, please let them know the Comic Book Club sent you. What are you putting in your collection drawer boxes this week, guys? What are you looking forward to?
There's so much great stuff. I'm looking forward to Batman number one. You know, I'm really excited about the teamwork on this comic. Blood Honey, number one, the one shot. It's got an amazing look to it. Can't wait to read that. And FML number six, one of my favorites. Hopefully, it continues in that direction.
That's really good. I'm looking forward to Adventures of Superman, Book of El, number one. Ooh. Our guy Philip Kennedy Johnson has been given a, I believe, 12-issue maxi series to close out a lot of his War World stuff that he was doing before the new Superman regime has taken over. It's very exciting they've given him the chance to do this, so can't wait to get into that starting tomorrow. Yeah. And let me shout out also Absolute Superman number 11.
Dude, going all like soups?
I'm going all soups. The whole, I love soups. It's getting colder. It's soups season. And the way that the Absolute Universe worked was like, it's like regular DC Universe, but dark and mysterious. And a lot of the other books have ended up being like fun, interesting, hopeful. This book is dark AF. And I like that this book is able to carve out that zone. So looking forward to the next issue.
A bunch of stuff I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to Closer from Image Comics. That's a new book from Kieran Gillen and Steve Leader. Yeah. They are great individually, so I'm excited to see what they do as a team. Right? Skin Police 2, number one from Oni Press. The
you
first
love
series
Skin
here.
Police.
I do love Skin Police. It's like, if you're a fan of Judge Dredd and things like that, it's the same sort of like arch sci-fi satire tone set in a world where people have been cloned off of skin and then go crazy. It's kind of gross as well, in case you couldn't tell. And a bunch of things are coming out. I'm also looking forward to Paul and Mary Jane continuing their conversation at All New Venom number 10. So I'm really pulling for those kids. Excited to
yeah,
see
you write in Sharpie on the top of the title, Paul and Mary Jane, right?
Yeah, Paul and Mary
Jane.
That's what
the book really is.
Exactly. Well, that's the romance for our age, I think. And folks,
I hate you.
That is it.
Folks,
I hate you.
Oh, man. The sound
that's
effect.
It for this week's show.
Wow. Jesus, weigh in on the sound effects usage, guys.
Sorry.
We got to hear if it's too much or just right.
A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Ethan S. Parker for coming out to talk about Godzilla Escape the Dead Zone, Blink and You Miss It, and Marvel Zombies Red Band. Also, Alex Crocus for talking about Talking to My Father's Ghost, an almost true story, which is out now from Chronicle. Next week show, Fred Van Lente is going to be here to talk about All New Harbinger, and Steve Orlando is going to be here to talk about the Exo Manowar. Also, Tom Stagowski and Janine Acheson will be on the show to talk about Nira, a Constance Evermore story. Comic Book Club News, our daily seems news like podcast. Check that out Monday through Friday. You don't have to come if you don't want to, Pete, if you want to make more room.
I mean,
Sons of a Gun, our DC podcast, talking about Peacemaker. Check that out. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support the show and all the shows we do. Don't forget to subscribe at Apple, Android, Spotify, or the app of your choice. ComicBookClubLive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Take care of yourself out there. We need
my neighborhood popping off with a firework display for some reason.
They sit on crappy couches and they let the secrets leak. An occasion of the day will let that special guest speak. So grab your
if you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.